You got it.
Amen.
Brought to you by
the Joy Network.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Village Celebration Radio Show. I'm Vicki Newton, and I'm glad you're here with us tonight. We assess this evening just how far we've come. It is the 50th anniversary of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. It was signed 50 years ago today, and it is also just days from the one-year anniversary of Michael Brown's death at the hands of a police officer in Ferguson, Missouri. In the St. Louis area and all around the country, memorial events are being planned as we mourn the loss of not only Michael Brown's life, but the many other lives that have been snuffed out by the police. Joining us tonight in the Village is Dante Mills, who is an attorney in New York City. Mr. Mills, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be able to talk to you guys.
You know, to many African Americans, it seems that the laws favor police. Why is that assumption either right or wrong?
The assumption is wrong because the police, the duty of the police is to serve and protect. And I think that a lot of times both police officers and African Americans flip that responsibility. And they take on the role of defending or searching out perpetrators or people doing wrong. But the basis of the loss is that their entire reason for being together is to serve and protect the community. So the laws are actually on our favor, but it's the application of those laws when you don't have that as your number one priority. Those laws are applied wrong, and it seems as if we are the hunted as opposed to the protected.
So let me make sure I'm getting this, because I think a lot of people in the Village will find this very encouraging. The laws are on our side. The problem is they're not.
The application.
Yes.
The laws are on our side. There are laws in place that protect our freedoms, our rights that we have, just like everyone else in this country does. And they're rights that we are afforded and we fought for and we've earned, just like everyone else in this country does. However, there are some police officers who apply the laws differently. So we know that the law is on our side because when we look at how some other people may be treated, it's apparent. Mm-hmm. The laws aren't different for us, but they're applied different by some police officers. And that's where that gap comes in. So if we see one group of people being treated a certain way, we know that we're entitled to the same treatment. Just because we get it doesn't mean that the laws are different. It means the people that are enforcing those laws have either been trained improperly or have been taught, and very well may have been taught from way before they were police officers, that we're not entitled to the same laws as everybody else, and they're wrong.
Mm-hmm. That brings me to my next question. Darren Wilson, the officer who shot and killed Michael Brown last August, set for an interview with the New Yorker magazine, during which he said he and his family don't go out very often, and when they do, they like to be with, and this is a quote, like-minded people, and not a mixing pot. Now, that sounds to me very much like he's speaking in code. So what do you see as the answer to exposing these police officers before they're on the job, the ones who don't understand that we have the same laws as everyone else?
I think it's a larger issue, not just for police officers, but people in general in this country. There's a perception that's going around that African Americans are bad people. I mean, that's the basis of it. And it may be coded certain kind of ways. They may use terms such as aggressive or assertive, even if they're trying to be friendly about it. But the perception is that we are bad people that they have to be protected from. So when they have that perception coming into the police department, and I'm familiar with the article that you're referencing, when they have that perception coming in, that it puts them in a position where they take a certain stance to protect themselves when it's not necessary. And if you look in that article, Darren Wilson said that when he took on the position in that neighborhood, he felt intimidated and unprepared. You shouldn't feel intimidated around regular United States citizens. We are regular people that have a community full of people that care for each other, that love each other, that do the right thing. In any community, there's going to be a couple of bad apples. But that does not mean the rest of that people in the community aren't entitled to be treated fairly, that they're not warm, friendly people that you should treat like everyone else and see as everyone else. But the problem is the perception that's out there is that we as a group are more aggressive and that people have to be protected from us.
We are seeing it more regularly. The videotape that showed Sandra Bland and that encounter with the police officer in Texas, it seems to be everywhere we look these days. And so when you have an encounter with the police officer and you recognize that perhaps he or she is operating with that mentality, how do you engage so that you can go home at the end of the night?
Well, it's a very important question. I'm sure there's people who's listening in your audience that they're going to rely on what I'm saying to make it home. So it's very important. I want it to be clear that we have to be comfortable with who we are. And when we approach these situations, we have to be the good people that we are. We don't have to fall into a stereotype of losing our cool or being aggressive because we think they may look at us a certain way. When an officer stops you, if you control your response, mm-hmm. what it does is it puts them in a position that even if they come in aggressive and say, this person is an African American, he or she may pose a threat to me. If you control your response and rest assured in who you are as a person, it forces them to take a step back and say, I understand that, you know, I may have been told that the majority act a certain way, but that's not true in this case. Now, does that fix the problem? No. But what it does is it chips away, and if they can start to see more and more that what they've been told is wrong, then when they approach the next person, it may be a little softer because they've had that positive experience. Now, if you do lose your cool, it doesn't mean that you're entitled to everything that they're going to do to you as a result of that. Mm-hmm. As a result of that, but you have to understand that if you can't control your emotions, if you can't make sure that your responses are how you would want to be responded to, it may lead and it may escalate.
And so, to that point, controlling our own emotions and our own reactions does not make us weak. Is that very clear?
Absolutely not. And I think that some people may say, oh, they want us to act a certain way or act like them, I've even heard. But generally, when you interact with people, you have to have some sense of control. Mm-hmm. Whether the person you're interacting with is being over-aggressive or not being aggressive enough, what you do is you assess that person and you kind of find a middle ground so that the situation doesn't escalate. And it's the same thing with the police officers. Just because they come up to you aggressively and you don't respond aggressively does not mean that you're necessarily backing down. It means that you're comfortable in who you are and what you're doing. And you know the rights you have. And if they don't abide by those rights or they don't follow those rights, it shouldn't affect your personality or how you're responding.
And you can always deal with that later if they are particularly egregious. You can handle that later. But controlling the emotions, as you say, in that moment is so important. How would you characterize the year since Michael Brown died, just in terms of legal victories in this fight against police brutality? Have we gained any ground?
I think we have gained ground. But I don't think the ground necessarily is legally, because, as I said before, the laws are already in place, and the laws are not what has to change. It's the application. So I think we've gained ground in bringing it more to the forefront, making people more accountable, and obviously technology and social media has aided in that process. Everything now seems to be on camera or recorded somewhere, and that's really good because it makes people responsible. If you see the amount of activity that we've had in the last year, imagine the amount of activity in the prior years that wasn't caught on camera, that wasn't exposed, where police officers simply lied on the police report or said that things happened that didn't. So I think that technology is helping a lot, but also I think that we're recognizing that we don't have to be who they say we are. And if we take a stand, it will matter. And I think that what happened in Baltimore, to give an example, or even in Ferguson after Michael Brown, it was us demanding that you have to treat us like everybody else. We're not going to succumb to you saying that we're in a different class, because we're not.
Absolutely. If you could change one law that police often use as a shield for misconduct, what would that be?
Resisting arrest is one thing that it's attached to almost every case in this situation. What they do is they say they approach someone, they had reasonable cause or reasonable suspicion to do a search or to request information, but there was a resistance. The gap is, how can I resist something that you're not entitled to do? So if you use that as a shield, you're taking away the fact that you've already violated my rights by putting me in that position. So because I don't let you violate me, that does not mean that I'm wrong. And that's really, that's the head that this is coming to, because more and more people see this happening, and they're saying, I'm tired of it. And I've had clients even recently say, I've been put in this situation too many times, so now here's the one time where I want to take a stand, because I'm tired of it. I haven't done anything wrong, and I get stopped, and I get pulled over, and then the police officer says, I refuse to give my license, or I resisted arrest when I didn't even do anything to be arrested.
To be stopped in the first place.
And I tell them that you have the right to stand up. Now, if you stand up, and I want to make this clear to the listeners, if you do take that stand, you have to be willing to accept that there's going to be a reaction. There's going to be a reaction, and it may not end in your favor. And that's really what we have to, that's what it boils down to, that fine line of taking a stand and showing them that you can't treat us however you want to treat us, but also not putting ourselves in a position where we can be hurt, or putting the officer in a position where we've clearly shown that intellectually we know more than they do, so they decide to use physical force because they believe they have the upper hand in that regard.
You know, it is so complicated. I'm in that moment, and I'm sure so many of us have played it in our minds and rehearsed what we might do, but you never know until that moment how you will react. And like you say, it may not work out in your favor. It's an awful lot for
it may not.
An entire community in this country to face. It's an awful lot.
It is, but I believe wholeheartedly that we're ready. We know, we're learning more and more that we're a powerful people. We've done a lot of things. You see us in the forefront, and we've been in the forefront, but now it's out there, it's public. You see that we can do anything, including take on a system that has tried to say that we were not entitled to the same rights as everybody else.
Well, the battle lines have certainly been drawn, and I would say they were drawn deeper last August when Michael Brown was shot and killed and outrage swept across the country. Dante Mills from New York City, we appreciate you joining us.
Thank you for your time.
And we'll be right back.
Glenn?
Well, you can tell that Chip over there is getting ready for the old family vacation.
Yeah.
He's pulling out the boat, airing the tents, checking gear, getting everything packed.
Yeah, we're about to head out on our vacation, too.
But you're sitting here drinking tea, surveying your domain from that lawn chair.
Yeah, buddy.
So, are you really about to leave on a vacation?
Yep, right here in Arkansas to enjoy our great state parks.
Why aren't you getting your gear together?
Because we rent it in the state parks. Instant vacation. No hassles before we go and none after we get back.
Rent?
Yep, the state parks have ski boats, party barges, fishing boats, kayaks, canoes. They even have RVs and tents already set up, plus the cabins and more.
RVs?
Just go to ArkansasStateParks.com. It's all there.
Instant vacation sounds like a perfect vacation.
Yeah, it will be if you mow my lawn while I'm gone.
Well, sure.
Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks. My park, your park, our parks.
Your boat is a piece of junk.
Yeah, but they don't make them like this anymore.
Gee, I wonder why.
What?
You know, we could have rented a nice boat or a party barge right here at the park.
Huh? Rent?
Yeah, and your tent is moldy, too.
Moldy? What are you, the boat and tent police?
We could have stayed in one of the park yurts. You know, big, roomy tent already set up right on the lake.
Hmm.
Yeah, DeGray Lake Resort State Park has lots of things for rent.
Instant campsite, eh?
Why not? Or we could have stayed at the park. Park Lodge, enjoyed the restaurant, the heated pool.
Do I do anything right?
Well, yeah, you married my sister.
Now I remember why I let you in my boat.
So the next time we and the girls get together here at DeGray Lake Resort, you let me make the plans?
Plan away.
Well, if we ever get back to shore, I will. Online at DeGray.com.
Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks. My park, your park, our parks.
My daughter made me this cute bottle with a little water in it. Until I can quit smoking, I can stop flicking cigarette butts and put them in here when I drive. They're litter, plain and simple. This is my way to help keep Arkansas beautiful.
For every ton of paper we recycle, we save 17 trees. I really like trees. Recycling helps keep Arkansas beautiful.
A message from the station.
The Arkansas Broadcasters Association.
And keep Arkansas beautiful.
I'll never forget.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I
live. As long as I live.
My first call ever as a member of the National Guard.
When we got to the armory, they briefed us on the wildfires. They were getting dangerously close to homes.
Helicopters were going out to drop water on the fires.
Guys in the unit were preparing for firefighting with local fire crews.
At that moment, I got my first taste of just how important the Guard is to my community.
See how the Guard can be an important part of your life at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arkansas National Guard, aired by the Arkansas Broadcasters Association and this station.
You know, Maya, you're really good in the sciences, and you're good with people also. Have you ever considered being a doctor?
Maybe just a little bit. My aunt was a surgeon.
Ah, surgery is an option. But did you know that family doctors are going to be leading healthcare in the future?
Arkansas needs family doctors. Family doctors see a variety of patients and conditions, focusing on prevention that saves lives. Family medicine, leading the healthcare team.
A message from this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association and UAMS.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
A storage tank ruptured, and for miles, chemicals were pushing up against the riverbanks.
This was a big, big deal, and it was going to have a serious impact on communities up and down the river.
I remember the moment. This local guy came up to me and said, they call the Guard out for this stuff?
You probably thought we were all about hurricanes, tornadoes, fighting Mother Nature.
Hey, it's a chemical spill. It's a disaster.
It affects the water supply, threatens wildlife.
We're talking about the health of entire communities and people's livelihoods.
You bet we're ready for these kinds of things.
We were out there with booms to prevent the spill from expanding.
We We're responsible for protecting and monitoring the sensitive wetlands.
I also remember the moment that same guy came up to me and said, I don't know what we would have done if they hadn't called the guard up.
Learn more about how you can protect your friends, families, neighbors, and the environment. Everything that makes up your community. Go to NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arkansas National Guard. Aired by the Arkansas Broadcasters Association and this station.
Gather round, children, listen. Let me tell you a story about a village that is built with his glory. No sorrow in this place. Just lift your voice and say, everybody, let's celebrate. Look like it's gonna be a lovely day.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to the Village Celebration. At the King Center today, they mark the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Voting Rights Act. And if you have seen the movie Selma, you know the backstory. Dr. King, John Lewis, and dozens of other social justice warriors moved the agenda forward on voting rights when they crossed the Edmund Pettus Bridge. We all watched it on the silver screen. We've read about it in our textbooks. Well, tonight we hear from two of the so-called foot soldiers who were there the day they walked across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. We're going to hear from Annie Mae and John Davis, who were on that bridge in their 20s. And now, of course, they are 50 years older. By the way, if you joined us last week, you know, we talked with Dr. Hilda Tompkins from the King Center, and it was a very difficult day for them at the King Center because Confederate flags had been placed on the grounds of the King Center and placed on the grounds of Ebenezer Baptist Church, the church where Dr. King was pastor. It just seems that we're not quite sure what year it is. Is it really 2015 or are we back in the 1960s? But today was a celebratory day at the King Center as they commemorated the signing of the Voting Rights Act. So we've come a long way, as we've heard in some instances, and in others, we are still fighting some of the same battles. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back, so stay with us.
From the Ozark Mountains to Old Man River, Arkansas's 52 state parks belong to all of us to experience, to enjoy, to remember.
Our family stayed in the Mountain Lodge at Pettigene for the holiday, and no one had to cook. We ate in the lodge. Oh, the view over the canyon. Oh, and those huge fireplaces. Oh, the chocolate pies.
I remember going to the lodge on the Gray Lake. The park naturalist took us out on a boat, but we'd never seen an eagle in the wild before, and we saw five that day.
The cabin at Devil's Den when it snowed. We went hiking. It was so beautiful. And then we found that journal in the cabin, and we sat by the fire and read stories that the other guests had written. I'll never forget that.
The State Parks of Arkansas. Call 1-888-AT-PARKS for a free guidebook or visit ArkansasStateParks.com. Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks. My park, your park, our parks.
I'd like to take 30 seconds to give pickup drivers a brief lesson in rollover physics. It has to do with the vehicle's static stability factor, which is defined as one half the truck width divided by the height of the center of gravity. The larger the factor, the more lateral acceleration required to cause the force of gravity to pass through a vehicle's pivot point. In layman's terms, pickups are twice as likely to roll over than cars. Unfortunately, we can't change the laws of physics, but we can change your odds of survival. Buckle up in your truck.
Sponsored by the Arkansas Highway Safety Office, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and this station.
Oh!
Oh, I can't believe that.
Nice.
I hit it perfect.
You're just standing too close to the ball. After you hit it.
Hey, you had one in the rough, two in the trees.
We're keeping score?
Yeah.
Maybe a new course would lower your handicap. Mm. Arkansas State Parks has two golf courses.
Yeah?
We should play them.
Tell me more.
The Gray Lake Resort's golf course is perfect for us. 18 holes overlooking the lake, and the wives will enjoy DeGray's Island Lodge.
Sweet.
Yeah, then we'll play the ridges at Village Creek.
Village Creek State Park has a course?
Yeah, here it's outstanding. 27 holes, Andy Dye design,
wow.
PGA caliber championship layout, and dramatic elevation changes since it's on Crowley's Ridge.
Wow.
And the girls will enjoy the cabins.
How do we get on these courses?
Well, they're in our state park, so they're public courses.
Yeah.
ArkansasStateParks.com has details and photos.
Now let's finish this round and book a tee time.
Oh, yeah.
Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks.
Welcome back to the Village Celebration. We appreciate your patience tonight. You know, I don't know if you've been in a radio station lately, but it's all computerized. And at this point, I would like to just throw this computer out the window. It's changed a lot from my first radio job in high school when it was where you really just kind of put the records on a turntable. I know it really was that long ago, and they were country records. But today, it is all computerized. And for some reason, our computers have simply frozen. Now, the person in me who believes in conspiracies says, you know what, we're talking about Michael Brown and racism and all the things that are happening in our community, and somebody out there does not necessarily like the agenda, but we are determined to bring you that interview from Miss Annie Mae and John Davis, who crossed the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Would we not do their legacy a disservice if we refuse to keep trying to get that interview to you? But let me tell you what else we have coming up. Pastor Philip Pointer from St. Mark Baptist Church in Little Rock is going to join us with our Village Verse. And right now, I really need a little more Jesus. I really do. So you all stay with us. We are trying to unlock the computer. Our producer is working around the clock on it. And I simply cannot believe this is happening on a night when we had some really, really good guests. Not that the rest weren't good, but we were especially excited about having this interview that we had done with two of the foot soldiers 50 years ago during the mission to move the agenda forward on the Voting Rights Act. But maybe it's not quite going to work out. So if you would just stay with us here in the Village, we would really appreciate it. We can take your calls, 1-855-525-5683. Give us a call and tell us what you think about this one-year anniversary of Michael Brown's death and the steps that have been made in the year since. I just finished writing an article for News One, so you all look for it. And it's called Far Beyond the Sidewalk, Michael Brown's Legacy, and it takes a look at some of the programs that have resulted from his death and how his death has not been in vain, because it has begun a conversation that we needed to have and we were not having about police brutality and racism in America. So look for it on the News One website. The title again is Far Beyond the Sidewalk, Michael Brown's Legacy. Call us, 1-855-525-5683. You know, we normally don't take calls, so come on and give us a call. Some of my friends on Facebook from St. Louis and here in Little Rock and in Atlanta, give us a call. Tell us what you think. We'd love to talk with you. And we're also stalling so that we can try to get this computer unstuck. Have you ever heard a computer crash from 17 floors up? It just might happen tonight. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Village Celebration, and I'm Vicki Newton. 1-855-525-5683. 1-855-525-5683. And we'll be right back. Thank you. Good evening. Good evening. You've called the Village Celebration. Caller, go ahead.
Yes, this is Philip Horner.
Pastor Horner.
Yes,
you are just in time, sir. God bless you.
Am I on time? All right.
Yes, he's an on-time God, isn't he? Because let me just say, we were having the most amazing technological problems. I can't even say the word now. And so it was frozen. The computer was frozen. Our interview with two of the foot soldiers from the march from Selma to Montgomery simply froze.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So that's when I sent that frantic text to you. Please call us. Please call us. So thank you so much.
I got you.
All right. Take us to the word, because if anybody needs a word right now, I do.
Well, James chapter 1, verse 27 says, pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. This is a text about justice and equality. Even though it only mentions two groups of people, orphans and widows, at the time that it's written, these are the two groups who were the most ostracized and the most oppressed under the governmental system of Rome and under the economic system of the Roman Empire. And so the Word of God here exhorts believers to make sure that we are constantly, consistently visiting the most oppressed persons with the love of Christ, and more so with our tangible and at times when necessary, even disagreeable help, that is disagreeable to the governmental powers or the economic system that keeps them in oppression.
So how do we walk that fine line between voicing our displeasure with the government and maintaining our Christian walk?
Well, I think it's important to realize that the Jesus we serve was a revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
The Christ of Scripture was not docile.
Mm-hmm.
He was not timid. He was not quiet. He was, in fact, a very vocal critic of systems of oppression. In fact, what Jesus came to do was to establish or to introduce the kingdom of God or the government of God in the world. And Jesus was very vocal about that. His Sermon on the Mount is a revolutionary treatise about a kingdom that God will establish, that people have the opportunity to be a part of, that is drastically different from what was at that time a misinterpretation of Jewish law mm-hmm. and Roman government, which was oppressive to all types of people. And so I think that's the first thing. I think we have to see Jesus as a revolutionary, as one who stands against anything that would be oppressive, and he uses all means at his disposal.
Mm-hmm.
That is, Jesus amassed major crowds, what you and I would consider marches, if you will. Mm-hmm. He amassed mm-hmm. major crowds where he gave speeches. We know them as his teachings and sermons
mm-hmm.
That were revolutionary. And then he did several symbolic things. In fact, even Christ dying on the cross, which was, in fact, for sin and to cover sin, was also a revolutionary act against Roman oppression. He uses the tool of the oppression as a tool of liberation. And so that's when we understand that from a conceptual point of view, then we can, with wisdom and tact, understand that it's our responsibility both outside of governmental systems and those who are within them
mm-hmm.
To use every means at our disposal to make sure that oppression, injustice, inequality is fought ultimately until the prophet says justice rolls down like water, and righteousness flows as a mighty stream.
I believe it is in Habakkuk, and you will certainly know better than I, where it says we are to love justice. That's one of the commandments.
Love justice.
To love justice. So the bracelets, WWJD, remember how popular those were? What would Jesus do? Well, Jesus would take a stand.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Jesus did take stands.
Mm-hmm.
He drew lines in the sand. He was clear about his intention to make everyone equal unto God. This is what is so remarkable about the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
What's remarkable about the gospel of Jesus Christ is that what his atoning death does is puts everyone on the same level.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the justice of God, all of us were violators and criminals, but Christ comes to say all those who have been criminals under God's justice, under God's judgment, can be justified or made just or made right with God. But then the gospel, on a secondary level, eliminates or erases lines of distinction and demarcation between groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so initially, the early believers in Jesus Christ were all Jewish, and they had a sense of a proprietary ownership to truth about God. And so they only shared the truth about Jesus with one another, that he was their Messiah. He was coming to set up the kingdom of Israel again on earth. Well, Jesus tells his followers, don't just go to people who are like you, people who look like you, people with similar backgrounds like you, but take this gospel, take this good news to the whole world. Everyone is on the same level. Whoever believes in him will not perish but have everlasting life. And so that is what Christ's message is about. It's about equality. It's about humanity as a whole and not subsections of humanity, whatever lines of demarcation we have drawn, feeling better or doing better than any other subsection.
Justice, the common denominator.
Absolutely.
Pastor Philip Porner, my pastor, senior pastor at St. Mark's Missionary Baptist Church here in Little Rock. Thank you so much for joining us, and your timing could not have been better.
Well, to God be the glory for that.
Amen. We thank you again. Stay with us here in the Village. We'll be right back, everyone.
A piece of junk.
Yeah, but they don't make them like this anymore.
Gee, I wonder why.
What?
You know, we could have rented a nice boat or a party barge right here at the park.
Huh? Rent?
Yeah, and your tent is moldy, too.
Moldy? What are you, the boat and tent police?
We could have stayed in one of the park yurts. You know, big, roomy tent already set up right on the lake.
Hmm.
Yeah, DeGray Lake Resort State Park has lots of things for rent.
Instant campsite, eh?
Why not? Or we could have stayed at the park lodge. Enjoyed the restaurant, the heated pool.
Do I do anything right?
Well, yeah, you married my sister.
Now I remember why I let you in my boat.
So the next time we and the girls get together here at DeGray Lake Resort, you let me make the plans?
Plan away.
Well, if we ever get back to shore, I will. Online at DeGray.com.
Sponsored by this station, the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, and your Arkansas State Parks. My park, your park, our parks.
Recent studies have shown that diabetes can be prevented, and the results are even greater with my patients over age 60. Losing a small amount of weight by getting some physical activity, 30 minutes, 5 days a week, and eating healthier has proven to be effective. Listen to the great results from one of my patients.
I had to learn how to change my way of eating because diabetes ran in my family, and I wanted to take control of it before I got it.
Having diabetes in your family and being overweight puts you at a higher risk for type 2 diabetes. These risks increase with age, which is why it is important to take your first step today.
There was a time I could not go from my basement up to my bedroom, but now I can, and that means a lot to me.
It's not too late to prevent diabetes. Join my patients who are taking small steps and gaining big rewards.
For more information on how to prevent type 2 diabetes, call 1-800-438-5383. This is a message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the National Diabetes Education Program.
Welcome back to the Village Celebration. We have on the phone now Robert Jackson calling us from St. Louis. Mr. Jackson, good evening.
Good evening to you, Ricky. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thank you so much for calling us. What do you think about the upcoming anniversary of Michael Brown's death and the progress that has been made in the year since we all mourned his passing, his killing?
Yes, no, Ricky, I kind of put it this way. It's like one step forward, two steps back, but in this case, two steps forward, one step back. I was really happy with the intervention of the DOJ to uncover a lot of the corruption that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was disappointed that Darren Wilson wasn't convicted.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I was happy of the uncovering of the illegal practices done by so many municipalities in this city.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I mean when I said one step forward, you know, one step back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, interestingly, did you see the article where now Dan Wilson is ready to talk? He gave
Absolutely.
An interview on the New Yorker magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying how he hangs out at places, but places with people like him.
Like-minded
really
people.
Scary.
He said like-minded people. He sure did.
Yeah, that's really scary.
Let me ask you this.
No. Oh, yes.
Do you think that Ferguson served as a wake-up call for the rest of the country? Because it seemed that there was just a wave of police-involved killings and corresponding protests after Michael Brown and Ferguson.
Oh, yes. I really do. I think that was the match that lit the powder keg.
Mm-hmm.
That started the Black Matter Lives movement.
Mm-hmm.
That started. And just the international interest in this story, not just nationally, but internationally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole hands up, don't shoot.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, it really spread like wildfire. It just makes you wonder how municipality of Ferguson, which is really St. Louis, that they it's really the county of St. Louis, but they did everything possible to separate the two.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's just amazing how a municipality like a Ferguson could just spark, just the national attention and just movements and organizations. And it was just amazing. One year later, I don't know as far, well, there has been progress, a new police chief.
A new police chief who was African-American.
Oh, yes, yes. And the court, and some of the judges, and, you know, some of the other administrators in City Hall that were eliminated. You know, so there was progress. But I really wish there was a conviction with Darren Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only sour taste left in my mouth. But I'm just happy with all the other changes that has been made. I'm trying to think what else.
Well, it's like you said.
How about making? Oh yes.
It's like you said.
Making the.
Go ahead.
Yeah, using the justice system as a cash cow, as far as bogus tickets and how most of their revenue was built on illegal tickets and illegal practices.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was uncovered.
Well, Robert Jackson calling us from St. Louis. Thank you so much for your comments. We appreciate you giving us a call. We'll have to do this again, open the phone lines and hear
definitely.
From our listeners in the village. Have a good night, Mr. Jackson.
Definitely. Yeah, thanks a lot, Vicki.
You know, we mentioned this video that we have as we were celebrating the 50-year anniversary of the Voting Rights Act. And so we are going to wrap up tonight's Village Celebration by giving the stage to Miss Annie Mae and Mr. John Davis, who were really teenagers, young adults, 50 years ago when they decided to take a stand. Thank you for joining the Village Celebration Radio Show. I'm Vicki Newton. President Barack Obama and thousands of other Americans will gather in Selma, Alabama to mark the 50th anniversary of Bloody Sunday, that awful day in March 1965 when African Americans marching to Montgomery to demonstrate their frustration with the obstacles they faced at the ballot box were beaten as they crossed the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Annie Pearl Avery and John Rankin were there, and they remember it vividly.
One thing I will never forget, when I got ready to march from the church to go to Montgomery, my mother had tears in her eyes. I'm the baby son. There's 11 of us in my family. And I'm the youngest son. My dad, by him being a preacher, he told my mother, God's gonna take him. God takes him. Mama said this one though, watching me go out the door with tears in her eyes. She had a fear that I wasn't gonna be coming back. You know how mother gets me sick. Dad said, let him go. Let him go. God's gonna take him.
Something sounded off. It sounded like gunshots, but it was tear gas. So what happened is, I'm trying to go forward fast then to try to find out what's going on.
Right.
And he grabbed me. He said, you can't go any further. And I don't know what it was. I guess it was the youth in me.
Right.
He and I began to have this physical disagreement. And we were wrestling and going on. And finally, he got two other officers to come along with him. And they took me on off to jail.
We've got to go to Montgomery to tell George C. Wallace that we need to vote. White folks and all niggas can't vote. Vote for what? We want somebody gonna lead, give us some leadership. All right, John Lewis, Jose Williams, they came down. They came now. They started talking, we started talking, communicating stuff together. Say, well, we gotta do something. Everybody's scared. I'm scared too. Say, well, I'll tell you what we do. Let's get our stuff together. We're gonna go to Montgomery to see George Wallace. And ask him why we can't vote. Okay. Everybody looking around, saying and got quiet now. Everything done got quiet. Especially when we left from the church, which is this way, coming this way. Everything so quiet. Seemed like the birds stopped flying. Seemed like the water started running up on the bridge. That's how quiet it was. Now everybody's shaking up and nervous, but we didn't know what could happen. So we got over and then we knew, Lord, we all gonna die today.
When I think about it now, I think about it with the God sent for me because I had contusions and abrasions, but there were a lot of people who were really hurt, much, much worse than I was. And I didn't realize being in that jail cell at the time, all the noise I could hear, I thought it was just from the river, what are echoes or something. But I didn't realize they were beating the people all the way back to the church.
I heard about Frieda Rider coming here. About me being 17 years old, I got scared. Frieda Rider. Then I got to listen and listen and listen. Then I heard about got to do for something for the life. For hours. So therefore, I joined with them. I was going to school. I'll be hooking up school. I hadn't been to school yet. I'm 17 years old. We got together in this school. The students got around inside the school. We had one teacher in this school. His name was Reverend Frederick D. Reese. He was the one calling on Martin to come and save him. So Martin, come down and save him. You're going to need some help. So they were going to take his life and teaching or everything from him. Just strip him down. We can't let that happen. Not the students. We all walked out. It was hundreds of us walked out from the street. Went down to the door of St. Lucia. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. Scared the same thing. You feel me? Scared, afraid, going wrong in a minute. But you know, you ain't seen my body. No black over off, no black and nothing. We kept walking the same. Because the thing we came at you, I said, y'all be quiet for a minute. Don't get yourself hurt with them. March so far. Come back here. You did that?
When I was about 9 or 10 years old, I went to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania to live.
Okay.
With an aunt there. My mother had 4 of us, so my mother decided to share me with my Aunt Hattie. Her husband had passed, and she didn't want to stay in the big house by herself. And my cousins were young adults. They were getting ready to leave and go to college.
Right.
After being there from 10 till I was 14,
I'm
back in Birmingham, and I'm back at the back of the bus. You know, all kind of things happened to me emotionally because here I am, I'm back at the bus. I can't go get a hot dog with this. You know, I'm saying all these, I guess I can only say that might have been part of it. And when I get back there, all kinds of stuff will happen. Reverend Shuttlesworth trying to integrate the school there in Birmingham with his own children. And a man by the name of Max Parker was murdered down in Parkerville, Mississippi. That was in the press. One man there in Birmingham, the man was castrated. And the only thing saved him was the fact that they pulled turpentine on him to keep him from bleeding to death. And his name was Judge Aaron. He left after he got well where he could leave. He left Birmingham. When I met Wilson, I told Wilson that I was ready to go. I got my own ticket. But see, when I bought the ticket, I also bought something else. I bought me a knife. I'm going to protect myself on the bus. I had a knife in a pocketbook, you know. And I had never had a knife before, but I figured I might need some with all this fighting and stuff going on. But Wilson says to me, so well, you can't go because you don't understand the concept of nonviolence. Now I had been hearing the word, but I didn't know what the definition of it was. I went to the dictionary. But in the dictionary, the word was not in the dictionary at the time. So I told him to explain it to me.
Right.
He said, well, that's when somebody hits you, you can't hit them back. I said, I don't think I want to do that.
Not that you
no.
Had your knife.
Well, I don't think I want to do that. So he said, okay. And what I did is I got a refund for my ticket. Oh, yes. I got a refund. I needed my money. I got a refund for my ticket. I want to go, but
decided,
I ain't going with this.
I'm not going with this nonviolent business.
Yeah.
Nonviolent business.
So about three weeks or so later, Wilson comes into the AG Gaston Lounge, which was my little hangout with my friends. We'd all hang out. And Wilson walked over to me. He said, well, how would you like to go to Atlanta to a student nonviolent coordinating committee meeting? And I thought about it. I said, well, I will get the opportunity to learn more about the civil rights movement. I said, well, also, I'm going to get the opportunity to go to Atlanta. I've never been to Atlanta before.
Right.
And I'm going to get the opportunity to go free. I left my knife at home, and everything is history. The first SNCC meeting I went to, they were talking about Mr. Herb Lee's death. He had just been murdered. And he was murdered in 1961. That's when I got involved. He was murdered in 1961. That was before, 2 years before Meg. And they also talked about Clyde Kennard, who tried to enter the University of Ole Miss and was arrested 2 days later for stealing a sack of chicken feet, and stayed in jail for a long time until Dick Gregory was able to get him out before he died of cancer. Now, there were several, I'm saying the Freedom House in Jackson, Mississippi had 235 bullets riddled into it. And not one person got hurt.
How do you explain that?
Well, there's no explanation for that. We were committed and we were devoted. We were frightened a lot of times. I've been in situations, you know, when I come out of Mississippi, they had blown up a restaurant down the street by mistake. They were trying to blow up our house where we were staying, and at 4 o'clock in the morning, the sheriff come out and said, "By God, they blew up the wrong damn house."
And you kept?
We kept going, but I'm just saying the fear, you know that something might happen to you. And you have the real fear, and then all of us, you know, in thinking about it, and you made a commitment to do something, then you also made the commitment to suffer the consequences, whatever it was.
You had asked about where's the leadership.
Right.
I'm going to tell you what happened to me.
What happened?
They are afraid to open the mouth. So I'm not afraid. Every day or every moment I get up sometimes, I feel like somebody's going to kill me. It's all because of my mouth.
Mm-hmm. When you think back 50 years, has a lot of progress been made?
No, not a lot. What it is, it's done a little bit more smart than with the white boy.
It's a lot of fun have been made now. But you can't see it. And I'm thinking now, why can't we see a lot of this stuff that went on? Look, all this money been coming to sell, all this tax money coming to sell. Every year we had a jubilee. Where's the money? All right. Yeah. That's it. You come across that bridge, or you come that way or that way. It looks fine, good. But go that way, or go that way. The houses, the street still got a pothole. The house is still right.
Gather around, children, listen. Let me tell you a story about a village that is built with his glory. No sorrow in this place. Just lift your voice and say,